The Indiana GOP in a platform fight over marriage. Mike Braun releases his first general election ad. That plus troubling poll numbers for Joe Donnelly and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending June 8th, 2018.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, Indiana Republican Party Chair Kyle Hupfer announced delegates at this weekend's convention will vote to choose between two versions of the state party's platform amid a fight over whether to define marriage.
The dispute centers on a phrase, quote, "We believe that strong families based on marriage between a man and a woman are the foundation of society." That language was in the Indiana GOP platform in 2014 and 16. Proposed language this year strips out the mention of marriage and includes support for single parents. But a growing number of Republican leaders back a reversal to the old platform language. That includes about a third of state GOP lawmakers, among them Speaker Brian Bosma. Now, Indiana GOP Chair Kyle Hupfer says convention delegates will vote between the 2016 language and the 2018 proposal. But there's a caveat. He says the 16 language delegates can vote for will also include support for single parents. That's because Hupfer says there was, quote, "universal support for adding such language when this year's platform was developed."
Is this fight healthy for the Indiana Republican Party? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Robert Vane, John Schwannis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and political analyst John Ketzenberger. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, how damaging is this intra-party fight?
Oh, it's pretty damaging. I mean, they've obviously lost the constitutional war, and they've lost the cultural war, but they still want to go back and discriminate against gays, and that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to do it a little bit more subtly. They're not saying, we hate gays. What they're saying is, we don't recognize their right to love one another. And what's amazing about this is the only real remedy for them would be to, you know, try a constitutional amendment to restrict marriage to a match between one man and one woman. It is a sign of the fact that the bigotry is still alive and well within the Indiana Republican Party. That's what it is, plain and simple.
Is this a bad look for the Indiana Republican Party?
Well, when you think about the electoral results of the last four or five cycles, you'd have to say no. We control everything. Now, whether that's because of this or despite this, that's a great question. I served on the platform committee in 2008. It's a very difficult process. A good buddy of mine named Chris Douglas and I pushed really hard 10 years ago to change the language. It's certainly better than it was then. Certainly no one can say that the Republican Party doesn't have diversity of thought, because opinions are all over the place on this. And in a way, I really applaud Kyle Hupfer, because he's trying to lead a thoughtful and constructive discussion, and it's not easy, especially on this issue.
The subject of leading brings me to this. Eric Holcomb is the leader of the Indiana Republican Party, but when asked specifically about this issue, he's choosing not to get involved at all and just, you know, oh, the process will play out as it always does. Is that an abdication of leadership?
I'd say it's pretty smart. Maybe, but I'd say it's a smart abdication of leadership. I mean, why? He has actually, I think, had the success to the large extent that he's enjoyed since taking office because he has avoided wedge issues. He has
any issue.
Well, his focus has been
phenomenally popular.
His focus has been on good government.
He's not done anything.
He's talked generally about, let's do things that may not be sexy, but we're going to create an atmosphere where business can thrive, where workers can succeed, where they have the tools and the education they need to thrive. Worry about things like water infrastructure, things like computer systems,
and even
state
good government. Yeah.
And even good government. And they're not sexy, but it's a safer. You're not going to have rabid protests outside the state house because of water infrastructure or because of computers or any of those things. So I do understand why he would take that approach. For Republicans, I guess Kyle Hupfer's doing the best he can do under the circumstances, but if you're in his shoes, I would think you don't want this to become an issue. I mean, it will be an issue, but you hate to see it surface in such a dramatic fashion, because you're, by definition, going to alienate some faction of your party, whether that's the progressive wing of the party, who would say...
Both of them.
Well, Robert and then Chris, right?
As a happy urban Republican, I would say.
He's log cabin Republican.
But just say real quick, because I know it's John's term, but this is a very conservative platform, strong on life, strong on the Second Amendment. So you would think that if you are a single-issue voter on a different issue, that you would be happy with the platform as a whole instead of focusing on the one thing where you maybe don't agree completely.
Logical.
So are we starting to see a definition of where the Indiana Republican Party still is? Because some of the people who were leading the charge to get rid of this language were what you would consider from the Holcomb wing of the Republican Party, and yet Holcomb didn't want to stand up and say anything about this.
What you're seeing is where the Republican Party is when it comes to the convention. The convention features people who are actively involved and often are the more conservative people in the party. It's also interesting, to Robert's point about litmus tests, we've become a litmus test society. You're with me on this issue or you're against me on everything else. And he's
correct.
Absolutely right. You know, the idea of a platform is to express a general philosophy that, you know, a large group of people can endorse and go forward on. And what it's become, and this is on both sides of the aisle, it has become, I want my issue in there, and if you don't put it in there the way I want it in there, then I'm going to be against everything. You know, that's the thing. Same thing that political candidates have to go against when it comes to the general election. So what
or
we're seeing is
judicial nominees, same thing.
We're seeing very narrow faction, and they're trying to exercise the authority that they have in the forum that they can, and that is the convention.
So if they adopt it, then that is the philosophy of the Republican Party.
Well,
by definition.
Yes.
But if it was up to me, they would just say we believe in strong families.
And that leave was it at what that. That was what the original.
But you're not
right,
interested in promulgating discrimination against gays, and many of the people in that group are.
Here's a great hope for the future. College Republicans were strong for the most expansive, most inclusive language possible. So kudos to them for sticking out.
Well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, does the Indiana GOP's platform fight show that the party is divided? A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question, should the General Assembly do more to restrict guns at schools? 76% say yes, 24% say no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, Mike Braun released the first ad of his general election campaign this week, while Democrats launched a seven-figure digital ad effort attacking Braun's business record. The Democrats' ad focuses on an AP report from the primary that alleged Braun's multi-million-dollar auto parts distribution business forced workers to operate in unsafe conditions and didn't adequately compensate them.
Fired after getting emergency surgery. That's what Mike Braun's company did to one of its truckers. Left him without health insurance.
Braun's first general election ad defends his business record, focusing, as he often did in the primary, on the jobs his company provides.
Better paychecks mean stronger families and stronger communities. That's why we nearly double the minimum wage.
Robert Fain, let's start with the Democrats first.
Yay.
Is this, we've talked on this show a lot about the Republicans' best attacks against Joe Donnelly. Will this be the Democrats' best attack against Mike Braun?
Well, they're going to have to throw a lot at him because of Trump's popularity in the state. As all of us know who are political hacks, freaks, activists, fun, whatever you want to call us.
Anybody watching the show? Really?
Exactly, hopefully. Midterm elections are fraught with danger for the party in power. You can go back to Truman in 46, Bush, Obama, so on and so forth. But it's almost a Reagan in 82. It's almost issue-based every time. The bad economy, the war in Iraq, you know, what's going on post-World War II, Vietnam, so on and so forth.
Incompetent
I
presidents.
Believe in this particular case, it's almost a complete referendum on Donald Trump. If you like Donald Trump and what he's doing, personally, you're going to vote for Mike Braun. That's going to swing. In my view, I think Braun will win for that reason. If you're against Trump and he makes you sick or whatever, you're going to be for Donnelly. It's so personal now, whereas in previous years, it was more based on issues and how the country was feeling generally.
Is this the Democrats' best attack against
Mike Braun?
I
think so. This is what he cites as his bona fides. He was a businessman, a successful businessman. Well, yeah, he was successful because he screwed his employees and let them go in unsafe conditions and cut off their health care and all the other things for which he's already paid money, not just alleged, but paid money to settle claims because he broke the law. So you've got these issues where he's holding himself up, and then he tells you that he's paying almost twice the minimum wage. Well, that's less than $30,000 a year. I'd like to see one of those people, like Mike Braun, live on less than $30,000 a year. It is the most, it undercuts exactly what Braun says there's the reason he should be elected. But in response to Robert's claim here, the problem Mike Braun has is that he wants to out-Trump Trump. He wants to be a rubber stamp for Trump. And I don't think the voters want that. I think the voters want somebody who is a check and balance on the power of the executive, and that is what Joe Donnelly brings to the table, the ability to work across the aisle, not a rubber stamp for every bad idea Donald Trump's ever had, of which we all know there are many.
Well, I do think we are going to find out how many Hoosiers want or don't want that in November. I think that's...
Well, I mean, he won by 16 points. There's no reason to think that
he's
less popular now than he was before.
I don't think he's as popular as he was when he was elected.
No.
But is he a net... Do you think he's a net positive for Braun?
Polls show he's still a net positive in Indiana.
Exactly.
By a smidgen within the margin of
error. Well, a win is a win.
Jack Kennedy said a one-vote victory is a margin of some sort.
Now, to talk about Mike Braun's ad, it probably not a coincidence that his ad focuses on his business record and his role creating jobs here in Indiana and across the country. Is that selling?
Well, I think it's an attractive point for him. I think that given the status of the economy right now and the unemployment rate in Indiana, and he can, you know, lay claim to any of all or all of that, as somebody who's involved in business, I'm sure that he sees that as a net positive. It's a well-done ad. It's attractive. Mm-hmm. But it's also a vulnerability. And I think that the Democrats recognize that the Donnelly counterattack, or the counterattack on Donnelly, is blunted if they get out in front of this and try to define Braun first. And so I think Braun's ad is a good opening salvo, and we'll see where it goes from here.
This is pretty similar to the formula we saw from Mike Braun in the primary, which is he started out with his ads talking about, hey, I own this business, I create these jobs, I pay my workers, you know, this wage. The formula worked for him the first time. Is it going to work for him the second time?
You don't blame him for trying the same approach. Now, granted, the audience is broader and different by definition when you're looking at a general election versus a primary. But I think it's a sound approach at a time when there's general dissatisfaction, surprise, surprise, with governmental entities at all levels. You don't see a lot of people who have governmental service on their resumes spending their money in their opening salvos of the campaign saying, look what I did for you as an elected official, which again, is maybe sad because we can say, those of us who are geeks can say public service is an honorable service and an honorable calling. But it's... I think it's probably the best approach he can take right now.
But he's got an outsider message, and the outsider message is hot right now.
I think Robert's
an outsider. He is a Trump wannabe.
I think Robert's assessment of the referendum notion is on target in part because national media. We had eight primaries this week, all the national media. I don't even know who won or lost, except in the prism of how did it affect Donald Trump.
So
the question is, what happens to Donald Trump between now in November?
That's true.
If it's going to be a referendum on Trump, we'll see what happens.
You don't know that from day to day.
And if I'm Mike Braun, I want that in this state.
Yeah.
I don't think voters want a rubber stamp for that person in the White House, even if you voted for him.
Speaking of Joe Donnelly, more Hoosiers and new poll numbers say it's time for a new U.S. senator in Indiana versus those who think Joe Donnelly should be reelected.
The latest numbers from the Morning Consult, which has tracked Senate approval numbers for months, show 41% of those polled approve of Donnelly's job performance, compared to 34% who disapprove. But while a third of registered voters polled support Donnelly's reelection, 44% say it's time for someone new.
John Katzenberger, how worried is Joe Donnelly about these numbers?
I think he needs to pay very close attention to the situation. As we were just talking about, it's very fluid. If indeed this turns on Donald Trump, that could be very much to Joe Donnelly's benefit, but he's got to be in a position to capitalize on that. And he has to convince people that he's doing a good job. And according to this poll, and so far it's just one poll, but according to this poll, people are starting to not think that's the case. So he needs to pay attention to it.
Well, 41% say he's doing a good job, but only 33% say he should be reelected. To me, that doesn't make a lot of sense.
I guess I would refer you to my earlier response, which is, I don't think anybody who is an incumbent regardless of party. That used to be an advantage, and I think maybe in the long run, in terms of organizational support and funding, it still is an advantage. But at this point, at this stage in the process, where people are so inclined to say, have this visceral reaction to gridlock in Congress and say, you know, basically get rid of everybody, I think he's probably getting some of the spillover. His collateral damage, perhaps, at this point. But I don't think that this
the people,
spells
people like
the outcome.
Joe Donnelly. The difference is they hate the Republican-controlled Congress. They think the Republican-controlled Congress can't do anything. And you know what? They're right. They can't deal with immigration. They can't deal with foreign trade. They can't do anything. And that's what the reaction is. But Joe Donnelly can sell himself because he's popular and he's doing what Hoosiers want him to do, and he's reaching across the lines, and he's not an ideologue like Mike Braun or Donald Trump. He wants to do things that are good for the state of Indiana, and that will play out well in the general election.
Paul says people like Joe Donnelly more than they don't like him, but they also think it's time for a new U.S. senator. Is that just that outsider kind of
it's
environment?
Indiana. It's a Republican state and has been forever. Everybody I know likes Joe Donnelly, including me. I've sat next to him at Mass at St. John's Catholic Church. He's an incredibly likable guy. He's going to be a formidable candidate. Mike Braun's got a terrific message. And if you're a conservative, you think this Congress is doing pretty well with Supreme Court, with lower court adjustment appointments and confirmations, with tax cuts, which helps a small business like me. So there's lots of things that the Republicans in Congress can campaign on. I know Ann doesn't like them, and I wouldn't expect Democrats to like them. But you can be liked and still lose. And history, political history, is replete of examples of that.
Well, Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell this week announced the Senate won't have its usual August recess, instead working in D.C. for most of the month. McConnell says the cancellation stems from a legislative backlog he blames on Democrats. He says the upper chamber will focus on spending bills and judicial nominations. That puts vulnerable Senate Democrats up for re-election in a bind. They typically spend August campaigning back home and raising money. One of those Democrats is Joe Donnelly, who will now spend most of August in Washington. Lawmakers will have the first week of August to be in their home states. Mm. John Schwanes, how big a setback is this for Democrats like Joe Donnelly?
Well, you could do the calculation. It's a take the number of days between now and the election, and how many will be he'll be, imprisoned in Washington, where he would rather, I'm sure, be back campaigning, and that would give you a pretty specific number. What is it, 20% thereabouts? It's not ideal, and again, I will now refer you to the previous question response and to the previous response, which is, this is yet another chance for Hoosier electorate to be reminded that he is an incumbent versus being somebody who's working, you know, pressing the flesh, pounding the pavement in the district, I mean, in the state. So it's not a defining factor, but I'm sure he'd rather. He would rather have the time here.
One of Joe Donnelly's claims to fame, if you will, has been how much he comes back to Indiana, how much he gets out around the state. It's something Todd Rokita, quite frankly, talked a lot about in the Senate Republican primary, is how much you see Joe Donnelly here all around the state. This really cuts into that. So how big a deal is this for Joe Donnelly to lose those 3 weeks?
Well, I think it is a big deal for Joe Donnelly for that very reason. It will be interesting to see if he decides to skip out on any days when there may not be some things going, although I'm sure McConnell has ensured that something will be on the floor every day. So I do think this is a disadvantage for Joe Donnelly in the sense that he won't be able to do what he does best, and that is get around the state and get a chance to interact with people, because the more people that meet him, the more he's liked, as is universally acknowledged. And so that'll be a bit of a problem. I do think it's interesting that in announcing this, Senator McConnell seemed to forget, as he blamed the obstructionist Democrats, seemed to forget the world-class obstructionism that he himself carried out for many years. And so the hypocrisy here is mighty.
It's overwhelming. And it's political. I mean, this is
sure
what he was trying to do, is to
absolutely
keep red state Democrats home.
So let me ask that, though. If it is political, and it seems pretty darn political, is, quite frankly, does that matter to somebody like Joe Donnelly?
I mean, I think Joe will be back here every weekend, like he always is, and I think he'll be pressing the flesh. And my experience with statewide campaigns is you can't shake enough hands in order to make a difference in an election. He's doing what voters elected him to do, and he's reaching across the lines to come to agreement on common sense issues of value. He gets good press from that. He just got good press last week from the Right to Try bill, even from Donald Trump, of all people. So you see him doing what he's elected to do and what people like to see him doing, and I think his press is just fine, and he'll be back every weekend just like he always is.
How does Mike Braun capitalize on this, though?
Working his tail off, being here, taking advantage of the absence, for sure, and speaking his conservative pro-business message. Why this hurts, I agree with John 100%, why this hurts is because Donnelly has to explain votes that he made that go against his base's wishes. He has to spend a lot of time in urban areas explaining why he voted a certain way. At the same time, in more rural areas, he has to explain why he voted a certain way to those people. He's walked this tightrope, quite frankly, candidly, about as well as you can. But under the red-hot glares of a 2018 election, with Trump's popularity in the state and the Republican Party's ascendancy in this state, his task was going to be tough no matter what, and it just got a lot harder.
Well, let's see. If the president gets us in a trade war and the steel industry and the agricultural industry are going down the tubes because of him, and meanwhile, his Joe Donnelly's base will go back to him because they're certainly not going to vote for a Trump lookalike.
If the vote for re-elect for president was held tomorrow in Indiana, would Trump win?
I think so, but...
There you go.
Explaining to the two sides, the left and the right, suggests that your referendum theory only lasted 6.5 minutes.
Well, because he has to do is he has to make it as much as he can of his time, because each part of the Republican and Democrat electorate is going to be upset with someone who's tried. If I'm 100% conservative, I don't have to worry explaining to the Democrats what I've done.
You have to explain to independents why a vote for Braun is a vote for Trump.
Let's not forget, too, that Todd Rokita tied himself as closely as he could to Donald Trump and didn't win.
Right.
A Brownsburg teacher says the school district violated his free speech rights when they fired him because he wouldn't go along with a policy on transgender students.
Brownsburg High School orchestra teacher John Klug says the district forced him to resign because his religious beliefs wouldn't allow him to call transgender students by their preferred names. Klug initially complied with the district's guidance by only using students' last names, but he says school leaders told him that wouldn't work next year, and he submitted a tentative resignation letter. The school says the resignation was voluntary and it's complied with all state and federal laws, but Klug says he tried to rescind his resignation but wasn't able to. He's asking the school board to give him his job back.
And Lady, are his First Amendment rights being violated?
You know, this is nonsense. A child ought to be called by the name a child wants to be called by. And shame on him for trying to embarrass those children. Shame on him. I don't see this as a First Amendment issue at all. I mean, he has the guidelines of what he's supposed to do. He's employed, okay? And if he doesn't like the terms of the employment, which he apparently didn't, because he resigned, well, he resigned. You don't give the resignation and then take it back, because sometimes nobody wants to give it back. I just think it's the hatred behind this. The idea that a child doesn't have the right to use the name the child wants to use as a sign of disrespect to that child, I think is inappropriate in any teacher.
Is this really a fight over free speech?
I don't think so, no. I'm not necessarily as full froth, I say that nicely, as Anne on this, but conservatives say on the issues, for example, of kneeling, if the policy is you must do X or not do X, if you violate the terms of your employment policy, your employment agreement, the policy of your employer, then you're subject to punishment or find another gig. I don't know how you can be hypocritical and say it doesn't apply here. They have a policy. If you want to follow the policy, stay employed. If you don't, go work someplace where you don't have to.
You're the First Amendment just about absolutist, John. Is this a case of...
Well, I'd say after the school bell rings at the end of the day, he can say pretty much whatever he wants with impunity. So it's not as if he's wearing a gag 24/7. To Robert's point, I mean, there are certain criteria that one must follow, adhere to be employed. Can you imagine, for instance, we'll move from this one issue to, say, creationism versus evolution. If we say anybody is free to practice in public schools what he or she, each teacher, can sort of chart his or her own course, can you imagine if you kids looking at the schedule, I got Mr. Jones, not Mrs. Smith, so my brother's going to learn creationism, and I'm going to learn evolutionary. It just doesn't work that way.
It'd make for an interesting ISTEP test, at least. Well, finally, Stormy Daniels, the adult film star at the center of an ongoing controversy over her alleged affair with President Donald Trump, will perform at an Indianapolis strip club later this month. Robert Fain, does this just go to show once again that Indiana is at the center of the American political universe?
Well, not to dance around the issue,
but thank you.
I'm a proud member of the Mitch Daniels wing of the Republican Party and not whatever Stormy Daniels represents. She's obviously trying to capitalize on her 15 minutes and, you know, like everything else happening in Indianapolis this weekend, more power to her. Spend money.
That's right.
Is anyone going to poll on
that? I have a question. Is the president coming to watch or what?
He's probably signing more tax cuts and creating more jobs.
This week.
Doubt Mike Pence and Donald Trump will be there, but you never do know. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Robert Vane, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and political analyst John Katzenberger. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR. Or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the new WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.